Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, January the 11th, 2022. And tonight we have several issues. As the kids in the hood used to say, she's got issues. You bet, we've got issues. Tonight, part of our issues are the fact that they took away history and gave us Martin Luther King. They took away history and gave us Obama. The Biden cabinet is now organizing to unite white Americans. And once again, we're being left out, i.e. the voting rights legislation. Now, if you knew history, you would see the pattern is repeating itself. Brother Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. You heard our theme for this evening. And briefly, we could say, play it again, Sam, or here we go again. But this time, my brothers and sisters, it is extremely serious. And when Sister Betty says President Biden is trying to unite white America to overcome the removing of the masks of America by Donald Trump. the successful removing of the mask of America. And what I mean by that, the America we see today has always been there. Have you forgotten slavery? And that's all I need to say. Maybe I could go into a greater detail by saying that the northern states won the Civil War, but the southern states did not lose it. For in the signing of the treaty, the peace treaty of the Civil War, the southern soldiers were allowed to take their weapons home. There was a formula for it, but as with all formulas, it never worked out. And the result was the southern soldiers took their weapons home to their racist societies based on slavery, and they were told to allow the black freed slaves to live a decent life, a just life, a life where they could participate in government, and it worked as long as the northern soldiers were there to reinforce it. It was called reinstruction. The moment the northern soldiers left, it was over for folks of color. And it has always been that way, and I believe it was 1874 where the legislature of Louisiana had a vote after they had gotten rid of the folks of color who were in government. And one of the ex-governors of Louisiana quoted, "We wanted to create laws that would deny black folks their rights, and the legislature's success in creating these laws went beyond any imagination." Well, that, my brothers and sisters, is the story of the nation. They went beyond keeping folks of color from their rights by changing the laws. Jim Crow, and they had all kind of names for the laws that they changed, but we all know about it. But recently, 1 year ago, it came to a head where those who wanted to move the calendar back to 1860 stormed the White House. Now, they give 50 different reasons and excuses. The vote was stolen. No, they understand exactly what happened. Black folk were on the verge of not getting justice. Let's forget about that. Black folks were on the verge of having the right to vote. And I believe it was something like 29 states already have laws on the book to deny black folks and folks of color the right to vote. Now, that's what other people do. And on this program, we focus on, as my father said, "And then what did you do?" We focus on ourselves. We see a situation where the wraps are taken off. Racism is front and center. And Biden is trying to forestall that with a percentage of the white nation to support what almost, to support almost justice for people of color, to be able to say this is a democracy, and it looks like they are in great trouble, because I tell you, and the reason why they're after Trump, because if he runs again, he will win. They are mobilizing. And that brings us to our position. And then, what did you do? Well, we look at the state of people of color in America, and I go right to what we are trying to do. We try to bring awareness to our people, and we have been saying for years, and I remember in the 90s, when we had our radio program on commercial radio, WWRL, if people can remember that. We paid for it. The people of the community supported us, and we paid for it. What was our issue? Our issue was political prisoners. What happened? One evening when we went to do our program, we were given our money back because we had announced loudly that the issue was know your political prisoner. And that comes down to what do we do, our people? Well, they gave us our money back. We were not allowed to work on the program. That's another story. And here we are today. We have our brothers and sisters that still in the death camps, and we cannot bring our people to the level to say, free our political prisoners or we will not vote for you. Just to vote. It is difficult getting funds to support political prisoners. What does that say about our community? They're talking about closing Guantanamo. They're not talking about bringing our brother and sister prisoners here. But if we're going to go back those 20-some-odd years and say, know your political prisoner. Maybe that will help. If we know who these people who sacrificed everything, gave their lives for the rest of us, if we know them, and as I've said, if you know them is to love them, and this evening we're going to have an opportunity to know a few of them, an opportunity to show that we love them, and Sister Betty is going to carry us on from that point. We will continue on the program as the way we always do.
Well, thank you, Brother Ralph. I appreciate the statement about Guantanamo Bay because most of the people that were incarcerated and held there, as we know, were tortured, and there were no charges brought against most of them. And most of them have been there 20 years. However, they were classified as enemies of the state and terrorists. Our people have been proven correct in that the legislation that came out of the 1965 through 67 Congress reflected the entire 10-point program of the Black Panther Party. So why are our Black Panthers still incarcerated 30 years, 40 years, 50 years? And on. And the question is, and what did we do? And this history that is repeating itself with the Nazis in America, because that's what they reflect, the fascism, okay? When it's white folks, it's fascism. When it's us, it's genocide. They're gearing up again. And this time, we can't pull a Coley in front of us. We can't use Lemire. We can't use Seth Hayes. So what are we going to do? And this program is an anatomy of a repression that requires us to come together to strategize and push back. And in case you aren't aware of it, they don't give a damn about us. We both know, we all know, every one of us knows that song. But if you were confused, the latest issue of the newspapers and the magazines and the Facebook links on what's happening in Chicago should throw it in your face front, line, and center. The whole issue of Chicago's teachers and the parents and the community and that mayor who's supposed to be one of us. And we have people tonight who are going to be addressing all of these issues. We've got somebody that's going to point out the contradictions in the fact that Guantanamo is going to be closing down, and yet our heroes are still captured and still captive in the death camps of America. But before we do that, we always like to start by remembering one of our warriors who has transitioned, and we remember her with poetry. And we're going to see if our poets are in the house tonight and can give us a few moments of inspiration and soothe our wounded, angry spirits. Professor Louis, thank you for coming back this evening. Your mic is open.
All right. Where does all the money go? Check your pockets. You ain't got no dough. No matter what you do or what you know, tell me where the money goes. Now, I know you feel politicians steal. That's for real. But what's the real deal? They're making money at our expense, trying to take a dollar out of 50 cents. The president, the Congress, bought and sold. That's old. It's cold. But who paid the gold? It cost millions of dollars to get elected. Who got selected? Who was rejected? The big corporations paid the campaign. They don't put their money down the drain. They paid the Republican. They paid the Democrat. Don't matter who wins. They like it like that. It's corporate power. Hour, hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So now that politician, through and through, he'll do what the corporation wants him to, because now he got a corporate agenda. Make, break, take, and bend you like a bad joke till the government's broke everywhere, because the big corporations won't pay their share of taxes. The maxes for some, they do a whole year of business and don't pay none. That's not profit, it's capital gain. While you feel the pain, you're out in the rain, they get tax abatements, government contracts, humongous loopholes. You know the fact, because when you got to pay, hey, what the heck, they already took the money out of your check. It's corporate power. Hour, hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So these politicians got no shame, but just the same, they need someone to blame. So they blame the immigrant trying to make a buck, blame the lady on welfare down on her luck, blame the junkie, deny the bail. But corporations make money off the people in jail. They blame the unions, cut them down to size. They don't like workers who get organized. They blame Africa, China, taking jobs from you. But they work for Nike in China, too. They blame all the Muslims, throw them under the bus. We're allowed to kill them, but they can't kill us. And the biggest blame you're ever going to see, that's Home Alone with your TV. Because your TV news gives you the blues. They just ooze with the views of the big corporations. There's no complication to the explanation of the situation. The corporation owns the station, and they tell you who to blame for the pain. But they never really name from where the pain came, from corporate power. Our hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower, they're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So corporate profits, they're on fire. The stock market, higher and higher. The economy, real, real good. Of course, you never see it in your neighborhood because so many people lost their jobs. The company sobbed. They turned the doorknob. We're sorry, slob. Sad but true. We're doing so good that we don't need you, ding-a-ling, because every damn thing all across the nation, it's all owned by the same corporation. They own the drug company, the hospital, too. Managed care owns the doctor looking at you. They make money from guns, money from prison, money from from insurance money from the collision. They sell you cosmetics with your last dime, designer clothes. Their name is the design. Charge you way too much for a gallon of gas. Sell you plastic surgery and cut your ass. They're in South America, Africa, Asia. Those sneakers on your feet, they're from Malaysia. Because these big companies are worldwide. Pushing in the bush, everybody aside. And the biggest ones got that special situation. They hide inside your TV station. Commercials for cars, commercials for beer, every minute of the day, every second of the year. General Motors, Budweiser, AT&T, they're the friendly faces on your TV. Because they make your enemy look like your friend. Don't bend. They'll shaft you in the end, because it's not about friends. It's all about money. And the ones who got it, they're not funny, sonny. Million billionaires, where the money goes, millions on clothes, private shows, millions and millions up somebody's nose. And they own the government head to toes, because when that politician leaves the government, he knows where he goes. He don't need a hint. He sits on the board of the big corporations, going back and forth like changing stations from government to business, back for more, round, round, and round the revolving door. So you see, the whole society, it is not made for you and me. Stop, look, and listen. Stop. Bottom to top, it's corporate power that calls the shots, and the president, the Congress, who run the nation, they just front men for the big corporations. It's corporate power, hour, hour after hour, while you sleep deep in your ivory tower. They're taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power. So there's a lot to do for me and you. This world keeps turning. It is never through. Free your mind. Clear your brain. The pain is when we stay the same, because you know we love this corporate stuff. 5Gs, SUVs, it's never enough, and that's rough, because it's tough to change through and through. Sad but true. They got you loving the hand that's beating on you. But maybe someday, baby, we will all wake up, analyze, get wise. Enough is enough, because when we are together, I could tell you all, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. And quiet as it's kept, it ain't no joke. This world belongs to the regular folks. But we got to get up and get what's ours and take a bite tonight out of these corporate powers. It's corporate power. Hour, hour after hour, they get the sweet, we get the sour. We get the weeds, they get the flower. It's a private airplane calling the tower. They're down in a jacuzzi instead of the shower, taking all the money that once was ours. It's all gone, John, to corporate power.
Well, Professor Louis has done it again. He said it all with poetry and prose, education and enjoyment at the same time. And you can get the poems of Professor Louis. Stay tuned on this program and others. You're going to hear more and more of Professor Louis, because it is pure education. Sister Betty, next. Thank you, Professor Louis.
We do have political prisoners in the house, and we always acknowledge them and give them front and center. And so without further ado, Comrade Jan Lahman, your mic is open, and thanks again for returning.
Comrade Lahman, what are your thoughts on the issues?
I'm glad to be here tonight, and greetings to Sister Betty and you, and you're absolutely right about Professor Louis' words and poems and education right straight to the heart of it all. I have one thing I'd like to emphasize tonight. This Friday, January 14th, is the birthday of a long, long-held, incredible, wonderful, sincere, and really a beautiful brother, Sundiata Akoli. It's his 85th birthday, and he's been in captivity 49 years. This is just so outrageous. There's a big push being made that's been going on for a minute, but a big push is being made to really try to put pressure on various authorities, including the governor of New Jersey and other officials, about, you know, finally, you know, letting this man go. He's been eligible for parole release for decades, but they keep denying it. And, of course, as people may be aware, his co-defendant, Asada Shakur, she's living right now in Cuba after being rescued from prison and then being given asylum by the Cuban government, the Cuban people. So they just have this hatred for this man. And this, and we're talking about an elderly, certainly an elder in every sense of the word. And the man has just spent his whole life. He was a Black Panther Party member and leader. He was a soldier and a warrior for the struggle for Black liberation. And what's happening now, and I'm calling out, my comrade Kazi Tori and I are calling out and saying that this Friday, the 14th, we're trying to get anybody who wants to join us for a fast, any kind of fast, whether it's a sundown, a sunup, or a 24-hour, however you would like to do it. We're calling for a fast for the freedom of Sundiata Kolie. And also, people should go to the Jericho website. There's information there about sending postcards and signing petitions for Sundiata. So I certainly encourage, really, really encourage people to go there and look at what they can do. And anyone is welcome, and I personally welcome, and my comrade Kazi welcomes all of you to join with us this Friday for a fast for freedom for Sundiata Kolie. And with that, well, let me leave it at that. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for that, Jan Lauman. Would you tell us how many years you spent in the death camps of this country because of your activities for liberation worldwide?
I myself spent 37 years in captivity. Many of those years, actually, I was in the same death camp as Sundiata, so I know the brother personally, and you know, he's just a beautiful human being. But yeah, 37 years is how long I was there.
Understand that, my brothers and sisters. And the question is, what are we going to do? Are we going to still be here next year begging a government to free our brothers and sisters? Because we will not even demand action for our votes. We just give them away. We practice slavery, political slavery, and there is a price for it. Our brothers and sisters are dying on the other side of the walls. Let us wake up, my brothers and sisters. Please go to the website, as Jan Lauman has said, and learn more about our political prisoners. Thanks again. Sister Betty.
Before we go to our next poetess that's in the house, we have a couple of special guests. As you know, the Teachers Union in Chicago has taken the principal stand that the issue of safety around this pandemic is not being met. The standards are not being met, and they attempted to bring this issue before the community. We are really fortunate to have a couple of very principled organizers and educators in the room who are also union people. We'll start off with a very prominent brother from Chicago, Brandon Johnson. We met this brother when we were at a conference for the Black is Back Coalition in Chicago. We will never forget the presentation he gave on the issue of the community and education. Brother Brandon, we thank you so much for taking time from your organizing and your commissioner duties to educate us tonight as to what you think and how you see what's taking place in Chicago. Welcome.
Hey, well, Happy New Year. Thank you, Betty, and to all of the freedom fighters that you know, continue to imbibe the spirit of our ancestors as well as the hope and dreams of posterity. So I'm grateful for the opportunity tonight. And it's been a very, very long couple of weeks, quite frankly. We are dealing with a mayor in the city of Chicago that is no friend to public education, and she's certainly not a friend of labor, and particularly Teachers Union. She is carrying on the same, she certainly carries the same attributes of the previous administration, where she is more interested in the ties that she has to corporations and the business community. And that played out in this fight. We've seen unprecedented numbers in terms of this pandemic, which is still yet in control. The conditions in which we've dealt with in the city of Chicago have been ailments that we've been suffering through for generations now, at least several decades. Obviously, over the last 10 years, 12 years in particular, the Chicago Teachers Union has made it a part of our business to connect labor and community, to fight for school communities that improve the learning and teaching conditions for our students, of course, as well as our educators. That fight has been front and center, right, fighting for a nurse in every single school. We're in the midst of a pandemic right now, and there are not enough nurses to go around in the entire city of Chicago. And we fought to get that in our contract, but that contract obligation by the mayor is not – she's not required to fulfill that obligation to the end of the contract, which is in 2024. So we got a mayor that we're fighting who just does not believe in the horrific conditions in which we've had to suffer through over the course of not just, you know, pre-pandemic, but in the midst of one. I think the other thing that we're confronted with here in the city of Chicago is the fact that the federal government sent $2 billion to the city of Chicago, particularly its public schools, to deal with the growth inequity that, again, that we've been fighting to address for at least for the last 10, 12 years in this particular formation of leadership. And that money is not accounted for. There's no transparency around it. There has not been a real concerted effort to make good on promises that she made during her campaign. The big sticking points, and I'll stop here, is that not only are we dealing with a mayor who is not a friend of labor and public education and demonstrated that and worked against an elected representative school board, we're also dealing with one, of course, who's not transparent, has not done right by the resources that have been sent. So we're pushing. The final thing is this. We don't have, we didn't have a testing plan. Before the break, we challenged the city of Chicago to make sure that we get kids and families tested so we know what we're dealing with, because this spike and this surge in this particular variant was really just inevitable based upon what we're seeing across the globe now. And there was a big debacle. You can Google it and look at it. There were piles and piles and piles of tests that never made it to their final destination because the city of Chicago did not plan. They didn't work with the folks who were responsible for educating our children. So we got a testing issue. The other challenge is there's no metric that would cause a school or the school district to flip. I happen to represent the city of Chicago as well as suburban Cook County. And there are suburban districts who set a threshold of 10%, that school goes on a pause. We had no metric here in the city of Chicago to determine whether or not it was so unsafe that schools should be remote. And again, we know remote is not ideal, but it's certainly a tool to be able to deal with what we know is have been a very deadly virus. The last thing is there was no real commitment to contact tracing just so that we can actually chase down where the particular virus has come from or the spread is headed. So that's the short version. And our members took a very, very bold action to vote for remote. The mayor canceled school. We didn't. But we are grateful that there are parents and students and teachers all over the city of Chicago that recognize that our first and our main priority is to keep children safe.
All righty, and thank you so much for that. And when you're talking about the present mayor you have, my mind goes back to the time to where it was more than imagination when Karen Lewis had agreed to meet with Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., chairman of the Black Panther Party, son of Fred Hampton Sr. And what a moment that could have been. But Karen Lewis came down with cancer. Her husband came down with cancer. She could not run for mayor of Chicago. May have been a different story. It was not. Here we go again. Thank you for your input. and we look forward to hearing more about what's happening on the ground in Chicago and more from Sister Betty on what we can do about it. And we say, number one, first free our political prisoners, and we will work on all of these other issues. Sister Betty.
I think we have another person in, on the call today who has a perspective on this struggle. Brother Mark, are you in the house?
Yeah, I think, can you hear me? Oh.
Yes,
hello?
Your microphone is...
Yes, folks, the People's Pueblo Party is in the house. Brother Mark Torres, thank you for joining us. He's also an educator that's committed to the community and to struggle.
Thank
your microphone
so much,
is open.
Thanks, Betty and Brother Ralph. And it's great to hear from Brother Brandon in Chicago. And, you know, right on, I mean, he kind of laid it out for what it is. And, you know, I just want to add a little bit to his great presentation. And, you know, I'm going to zoom out a little bit because, you know, I'm here in New York and we're doing some organizing here as well. But, you know, this whole thing with, you know, there's this neoliberal agenda, right? You got, you know, the neoliberal wing with the Christian fascists, which are dominating the Republican Party. And you have a neoliberal agenda with this type of fake or faux multiculturalism in the Democratic Party, which is the dominant wing of the Democratic Party right now. I mean, you have some progressives in there, but they're weak and ineffective. And, you know, Lori Lightfoot and her and Martinez, the chancellor over there, and Eric Adams here and Obama, they all represent, they're representatives of this multicultural wing of the Democratic Party that really pushes a neoliberal agenda. So, you know, when they're running for office, they sound like us, want to be around us, tell us things we want to hear. And as soon as they get into office, they follow a neoliberal agenda, which is a corporate agenda, right? And so what do big businesses and corporations want? They want the schools open so that kids can be in the schools while their parents go to work, right? And it's really because this capitalist system, it can't function unless the workers go to work and produce profits. We all know that. And so the whole idea is that in New York City, what they did was they forced all the school staff to get vaccinated, right? It was a vaccine mandate with the calculation that if we get everybody vaccinated, then a lot of teachers will get sick, but most of them won't die, right? That was the calculation. It's just straight up a neoliberal corporate agenda. While at the same time, corporations like and banks like Goldman Sachs are having all their workers on remote. So for them, they didn't use the same metric or the same calculation, but they need workers to go to work so these corporations can make their money. And so what's happening in Los Angeles and places like Chicago is that you have teachers unions that from the very beginning of their caucuses, because these are places where insurgent caucuses have taken over the union. They, from the very beginning, and I'm sure Brandon can speak more to this, with the core group there and Karen Lewis, as Brother Ralph had mentioned, they started with this idea that we have to work with parents, we have to work with kids, we have to work with the community, you know, staff in the schools, working with all these folks, make a powerful force. Now, in New York, you don't have that dynamic. In New York, you still have the Unity Caucus in charge of the United Federation of Teachers. And often, more often than not, they act like a company union, right, where they'll get concessions, excuse me, but it's not from direct action. It's not from mobilizing forces. It's more from using member dues and also being at the table as the lieutenants of the corporations of big business. And so, you know, what you see across this country is a privatization of education, and the corporations using the schools so that the workers can go to work. So this whole thing is being driven by what we call a neoliberal agenda, which is a corporate agenda, how to maximize the profits in the middle of a pandemic, you know, when people are getting sick and people are dying. So, I mean, there's a bill in the South Carolina legislature to give money to folks to take their kids out of public schools, put them in religious schools where the state will not have any accountability or very little accountability. And so, you know, because we're at this stage of capitalism, this country of decay, this economy is slowing down. It's losing the international struggle against other capitalist countries like Russia and China and other places, especially China. The capitalists are going to more and more squeeze us, the people who live in this country, and they're going to use immigrants as a scapegoat. You know, they use Asians as a scapegoat. You know, I tell people, you know, you're angry. It's righteous anger. You should be angry, but the target shouldn't be an Asian guy, random Asian guy pulling out a can out of a garbage can. The enemy is Jeff Bezos. The enemy is, you know, Steve Jobs. Well, not Steve Jobs, the guy from Microsoft, right? Bill Gates. You know, these people are the enemy. And what they're doing is that they're pushing a corporate agenda that says, hey, vax versus anti-vax is the primary contradiction. And it's not. You know, people who don't want to take vaccines are not our enemies, right? People who want to take vaccines are not our enemies. We need to find common ground. And so parents and teachers and kids in Chicago, they're not each other's enemies. The enemies are these corporations and their paid-for politicians like Lori Lightfoot in Chicago and Eric Adams here in New York. And all of these, most of these Democrat, corporate Democratic politicians and the Republican. And so, you know, I just want to say here in New York, we have something called the Movement of Rank and File Educators. It's not the only insurgent caucus, but, you know, we look at the examples of Chicago and Los Angeles, and we're trying to model ourselves on them. And there's one thing that we all got to realize, and y'all probably know this better than a whole lot of people. In 1929, there was an economic collapse in this country, and movements didn't sprout up right away. They took years, right, to sprout up and demand jobs, demand housing, demand food. And so it's the same thing now, right? There's a lag in consciousness, but if folks, you know, like Brandon and Sister Betty and Brother Ralph and myself, we have to continue our work. We can't be, you know, disheartened. We can't get frustrated, you know, because there's going to be a point where the masses of people will get it. And, you know, I'm still of the conviction that it's going to be poor and working people that lead the struggle because they have the most to gain and the least to lose. And, you know, I'm just thanking y'all for having us on this show so we can get this message out. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that. The struggle continues, and when you mention California, it has come to light that California may be the first state to institute a national health program. That is a statewide health program. That was what one of the things that was missing when the pandemic struck. You can create a vaccine, but you can't distribute it without a system. And we're still struggling for a system, and it seems that better vaccines are coming down the pike, but we're still with the same problems. But I think a first step, which we have been fighting for 30 years, a national health care program. Sister Betty.
Brother Mark, I want to thank you so much for that analysis, because it fits right in with what the Panthers were saying way back in the 1960s. You got to have a program, and their program was a socialist program. And what we got was liberalism, if you can call it that. We did not get freedom, okay? We got a Band-Aid. We didn't get a cure. And the only cure is revolution. That's more and more obvious. as the song says, they don't give a damn about us. Okay, mm-hmm. I want to up the mic of another poet, and then we're going to go on to our next analysis. But in the meantime, Sister Nzinga, your mic is open.
Okay, good evening. Thank you, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty. It's always a pleasure. I just want to say it's a whole population out here that I have yet to hear Eric Adams mention. This homeless population, it's devastating. And it's affecting all of us. And I've yet to hear him mention that. So I wrote a poem called Forgotten. Alone, I walk aimlessly, oblivious to everyone that I see. And my black skin won't let them see me. I cannot seem to find my way. And I feel like I'm being betrayed by a government that fails me each and every day. So I meander through life each and every day like a lonely soul in complete disarray. The synthetic drug the government has prescribed me is the only way to escape my harsh reality, that I may never get the opportunity at a chance to fulfill my destiny. For I am solely confined in this prison of my mind, which once upon a time enabled me to think and consciously experience my world in a way that made total sense of that by which I am surrounded. I'm in a cold, cold world in which I am drowning. But as usual, the powers that be have totally forgotten all about me, like I am no longer part of their society. After their war and their drugs robbed me of the finer things in life and my mental capacity. Once upon a time, I had a dream of gold and a destiny. At one time, I did possess a real and cognitive consciousness. Up until the day I became a vet, where suddenly I was mixed in an environment of bombing and killing for a racist government, then sent back home to meet my slow descent into an abyss from which I am able to ascend. No longer do I possess cognizant consciousness. No longer do I see a true destiny, for I do not see a place such as that for me. No, I do not own a place in which I can lay my head, so I just roam through life like the living dead. And it's so unfortunate that this population has yet to be addressed. And it's like more than an elephant in the room. It's everywhere, trains, buses, streets, front doors, doorways, expensive hotels. And I have yet to hear our new mayor address that. Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph, for allowing me to read my poem.
Hey, thank you for the poem. And what we try to do here is give people a roadmap. Give people something with which to see and judge and work in this world that we live in.
And Sister Nzinga, I want to remind you, we haven't decided if the Jericho event is going to be live or virtual, but it is January the 22nd. So please mark your calendar, all right?
Yes. Okay.
Have you on the fire.
Will do. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
And having said that, Jericho is in the house. Sister N, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty. Always an honor and a privilege to be in this great and wonderful company. Shout out to Jan and Kazi for publicizing me fast for Sundiata. One can fast for more than one day if one feels like it. And also people would like to make it public. So if you go to Sundiata Akoli FC, which is for Freedom Campaign, I believe it's .org, you can get all the info there as well. And he will be going to court soon. You know, he is appealing his last parole denial of his many parole denials. And as I had said previously on this show, there's a whole bunch of amicus briefs in support of Sundiata, including four from different black police organizations. So very interesting in coming out in support of Sundiata, and we're very happy to hear that. So it is Sundiata Akoli FC, all one word, all lowercase, .org. And you can sign, you can send a digital postcard, you can sign the petition. You can read more about Sundiata if you don't know much about him. Also, interestingly, another person who has a birthday that same day is Herman Bell, who is out here in New York City doing work in the community. So they share a birthday, not the same year, but the same day. I do have an update here on our dear brother, Mumia Abu-Jamal. Now that the Pennsylvania courts have finished, you know, dicking around and endlessly waiting and causing all sorts of delays on his previous appeal, having finally denied that appeal, he can now go ahead with his other appeal. Apparently in Pennsylvania, you're only allowed to do one appeal at a time. And then if you don't do it on time, they'll tell you it's time barred, right? There's been a new legal filing in Mumia's case. And this is as of January 4th. And this was written by Johanna Fernandez of the Campaign to Bring Mumia Home. In her novel, Their Eyes Were Watching God, Zora Neale Hurston wrote, "There are years that ask questions and years that answer. With continued pressure from below, 2022 will be the year that forces the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office and the Philly Police Department to answer questions about why they framed imprisoned radio journalist and veteran Black Panther Mumia Abu-Jamal. Abu-Jamal's attorneys have filed a PCRA petition focused entirely on the six boxes of case files that were found in a storage room of the DA's office in late December of 2018, after the case being heard before Judge Leon Tucker in the Court of Common Pleas concluded. The new evidence contained in the boxes is damning, and we need to expose it. It reveals a pattern of misconduct and abuse of authority by the prosecution, including bribery of the state's two key witnesses, as well as racist exclusion in jury selection, a violation of the landmark Supreme Court decision in Madison v. Kentucky. The remedy for each or any of these claims in the petition is a new trial. The court may order a hearing on factual issues raised in the claims. If so, we won't know for at least a month. The new evidence includes a handwritten letter penned by Robert Chaubert, the prosecution's star witness. In it, Chaubert demands to be paid money promised him by then-prosecutor Joseph McGill. Other evidence includes notes written by McGill prominently tracking the race of potential jurors for the purposes of excluding Black people from the jury, and letters and memoranda which revealed that the DA's office sought to monitor, direct, and intervene in the outstanding prosecution charges against its other key witness, Cynthia White. Mumia Abu-Jamal was framed and convicted 40 years ago in 1982 during one of the most corrupt and racist periods in Philadelphia's history, the era of cop-turned-mayor Frank Rizzo. It was a moment when the city's police department, which worked intimately with the DA's office, routinely engaged in homicidal violence against Black and Latinx detainees, corruption, bribery, and tampering with evidence to obtain convictions. In 1979, under pressure from civil rights activists, the Department of Justice filed an unprecedented lawsuit against the Philadelphia Police Department and detailed the culture of racist violence, widespread corruption, and intimidation that targeted outspoken people like Mumia. Despite concurrent investigations by the FBI and Pennsylvania's Attorney General and dozens of police convictions, the power and influence of the country's largest police association, the Fraternal Order of Police, FOP, prevailed. Why are we not surprised, right? Now, more than 40 years later, we're still living with the failure to uproot these abuses. Philadelphia continues to fear the powerful FOP even though it endorses cruelty, racism, and multiple injustices. A culture of fear permeates the quote-unquote city of brotherly love, also known as the city of brotherly hate. The contents of these boxes shine light on decades of white supremacy and rampant lawlessness in U.S. courts and prisons. They also hold enormous promise for women's freedom. Stay tuned. So that is a brief update on our dear brother Mumia. Haven't seen him in a long time. He's an amazing, amazing human being. And also just got notice of something that will be happening way later in the year. But good for people to know. But anyway.
And,
yes?
And we're going to have to come back to you because we have a lot of folks. I was thinking you were going to really do an analysis of the Guantanamo situation as it impacts on our in contrast to our political prisoners. But Henry was supposed to, you know, bring us up to date on Mumia. I'm going to open up Brother Henry Hagin's mic to see if he wants to reinforce anything you just said.
Okay, I'm
Henry,
sorry,
your mic.
Do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, these things happen, no problem, and we appreciate Ann's contribution and dedication. So it works like that sometimes. I would just encourage folks to remain abreast of what's going on with Mumia, visit the website, and to share this information with other people. Mumia has been falsely imprisoned for more than 40 years now. The man should have never spent a day in jail. And we continue to fight for his release. It's an atrocity and an indictment against this system that they would imprison a man who spoke the truth and who continues to live on in dignity and effort. So we want to support Mumia. He's one of our most brilliant freedom fighters, and we thank all of those people who have supported him over the years, and we urge people to continue to do so. Mumia is all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And one of the things that we must do, we must say of our political prisoners is paramount, numero uno, the first thing that has to be considered. Those who understood and tried to bring us a message 50, 60 years ago are dying in the death camps. And if we don't care about them, the system feels we can't get anything to unite us against them. And so, what's the call? Free them all.
Okay, we have a parent organizer on the call tonight. And given the most recent Chicago decision, especially the damning evidence that the teachers were right when they said the protocols were not being followed, and yet there was a lie about the protocols being followed. The COVID money wasn't being used the way it should be, and yet there was a lie about what the money was being used for. So within that context, New York, I do believe, is not too far behind Chicago with this contradiction. We want to welcome back our comrade, Muba Yerafulani. Sister Muba, your mic is open, and thank you for being willing to share some of your concerns with us on this education issue.
Thank you so much, my sister Betty and Brother Ralph, for this show, this talk show. We need it so much in our communities. I'm just going to be brief because one of the breaking news right now in New York City, and I just want to recognize Brother Mark for his awesome presentation on the facts that's happening in New York City also. But one of the most breaking news is that our high school youth and some of our middle school youth have actually put some ultimatums on the mayor and chancellor pertaining to the COVID-19 and the different violations within the schools under this new COVID variant. Tomorrow they are expected to walk out of these classes if their demands are not met. I heard that the chancellor actually is asking to meet with the high school's students. We have over 800 students that have signed the petition already to walk out of school tomorrow. So this is very historical for us, and we are looking forward to see the end. Most importantly, we need to support these young people who are so courageous and know what is right and is fighting for righteousness. So I just wanted to share that with everyone. And before I leave, we are having a parent panel on January the 15th. We would like people to come on to that Zoom and hear some of the concerns that some of our parent leaders at New York City Public Schools, and come in here and share. It's going to be a very powerful panel of parents on the 15th of January. I would send that information out to you, Sister Betty. Okay, so that's what I have to share for this evening. Again, the struggle continues. We want our political prisoners freed. And, of course, we are going to support our youths tomorrow. As they walk out of the classrooms, we will be out there with them. Thank you so much, everyone.
What time is your workshop on the 15th? Tell them what time.
Oh, it's going to be at 7 p.m. in the evening.
Okay. Is there a website they can go to get the flyer?
Sister Betty, I will have to send that to you. And as you know, those that you may know, you have to send it out. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I don't have the information in front of me.
We'll share it with Jericho as soon as you give us the up-to-date flyer.
Okay.
Because
everybody
here knows the website.
Thank you. I will send it to you as early as tomorrow. Okay?
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We as activists must be ready to support these students. They are moving ahead of us, and it is a wonderful thing to see that there is movement.
I hope they follow up by also checkmating the mayor on trying to reactivate Stop and Frisk, because even the court said Stop and Frisk was only for black and brown people, and they never found weapons to justify the so-called concerns with Stop and Frisk. Here this so-called black mayor wants to bring back Stop and Frisk. And everybody who thinks he's going to stop and frisk somebody not black and brown, raise your hand.
Thank you so much for that,
Thank
Sister Betty.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. And next up we have Dennis Knowles. Your microphone is open. 1-6-2-3.
Good evening. I am okay. I'm not okay. I'm like everybody else. America, land of the colonizer, the brutes, the thieves, the mass murderers of all indigenous native peoples, the enslavers of all Africans, the cold, cult nihilists. That's what America is. The ugly. That's what America is. That's what it did. That's what America does. You know, we mentioned Guantanamo Bay. You did, Brother Ralph, being shut down. But we find that all of our political prisoners will never get out. Never get out. Just because of standing up and speaking out for the freedoms that are required because we're human beings.
That's right.
We find that the more than 1,700 congressmen once enslaved black people. This is who they were and how they shaped this nation. And we still find ourselves constantly begging for rights that should just be human rights. When do we then begin to sound the horn and make a change in our direction as to what direction we actually go in? We will not fit in. We'll never be accepted in any community in this nation that they've stolen and murdered to take. We'll never have the true consensus. We'll have bleeding hearts. We'll have colonizers that say, oh, I feel real bad for you. We'll have all these entities say how bad they feel about us, and then even begin to corrupt us into believing, and we've seen this time and time again, corrupt us into thinking that we're going to win something. We don't win. We have to take everything. You produced something, or you were involved, you and Sister Betty, this weekend on colonialism, the struggle. And it was very profound because we sing the same tunes day in and day out And it seems as if we're going nowhere. We seem like we're going nowhere because we can't pass it on to our youth. Or our youth say, well, we got new ideas. When you lose the history of anything, you will fail to repeat all of the things that are destined to keep us in doom. The Washington Post has compiled the first database of slaveholding members of Congress by examining thousands of pages of census records and historical documents. For the first seven decades of its existence, Congress returned again and again to one acrimonious topic, slavery. Many of the lawmakers arguing in Washington were participants in the brutal institution at home. Here's what that looked like on March 7, 1850, as Senator Daniel Webster delivered a famous speech about slavery, 45 of the 106 congressmen listening owned human beings. Those slaveholders included Jefferson Davis, Andrew Johnson, and Sam Houston. Today we have a slaveholder named Biden. We had slave neo-brutal fascist colonizer Barack Obama, who followed suit. And we have so many that would sell us out and serve us up in Congress today. These people who are following some dream, some dream and hope that we will be free, when in fact freedom is not asked for, is something that you take. We have to change our mode of operation. We have to change our way of thinking. We have to get out of being insane and become sane, because nobody's going to give us, Africans nowhere in the world, nothing. They're taking from us. They still, even in Brazil. I had a friend come from Brazil on yesterday, said that when they landed in Brazil on several weeks ago, they only intended to be there 1 week. But in Brazil, where America's meatpacking industry is, Brazil, the people were dying in the streets from the COVID. The government was letting the people drop dead. So this is what we face all over the globe. And I believe that we must change our ways, means, and goals and strategy. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much for that. That's a wake-up call. And we feel that that journey begins with supporting those who understood this many years ago. And with their understanding, they fought to change it. And our role is to free them all. Sister Betty.
So we must join that fast that Brother Jan Kazi are advising us about. We want to keep it going, dealing with an anatomy of oppression and of capitalism and imperialism. Tom, your mic is open. Tom Syracuse, your mic is open. Thank you for coming back. Tom?
Hello, all of my brothers and sisters. We just saw how corrupt, how hypocritical our so-called legal system is when all the charges against former Governor Cuomo were dropped on the one hand, and on the other hand, our political prisoners are left to rot in these jails, and it's a huge battle to even to get them released on humanitarian reasons, as many of them are very, very sick. Today, I'd like to talk about another hypocritical situation. Recently, Errol Lewis, who hosts Inside City Hall, which is on New York One TV, and who fancies himself as an investigative reporter, asked former Mayor de Blasio what he thought was the most important accomplishment of his four-year tenure. De Blasio, a master of doublespeak, had the gall to say that he improved the city's economy and reduced poverty. Errol Lewis never questioned him on the increased homeless and begging on the streets, even as cold weather comes on us. Lewis never mentioned converting the shelter system from warehousing the homeless into individual rooms with their own bathrooms and providing food in commercial cafeterias. Never mentioned was the increasing rents forcing mom and pop stores to close, and how de Blasio has changed zoning laws, leading to even more gentrification, displacing the working class, and in particular, communities of color. Never mentioned the unemployment that compares with the Great Depression of the 1930s. Is this what de Blasio claims is economic improvement and less poverty? Is the new mayor, Eric Adams, has he mentioned any of these problems? Of course, all of this suffering is based upon capitalism that puts profits of the billionaires on Wall Street over the needs of the people. Capitalism, which cannot even ameliorate problems such as the climate crisis and the socioeconomic decay that even its imperialist wars cannot resolve. The majority of people believe that we live in a democratic system and that we have a choice between two parties which are really instruments of Wall Street, whose stock market stays at an all-time high. As more and more people lose their jobs and their homes, I believe people will wake up and realize that capitalism does not work, and that it's up to us to get people to also realize that we must replace capitalism with a grassroots socialism, form of socialism, which puts the needs of the people ahead of a small group of capitalists that run this country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that, Tom Syracuse. And as you notice, that in the southern part of this globe, the people there are waking up, so to speak. We see that we have a change of government in Chile. But I'm concerned with the change of government through voting. And we must remember, in Chile, Allende, who was voted in as president, was overthrown by Pinochet, who was supported by America, a coup that overthrew the government. We see in Honduras, a woman has become the first woman president in the south of the Americas. But again, we must understand, although the popular vote was for her, how long will she be there? Will America stop supporting armies to overthrow people? We remember the last time in Honduras, the people's selection was overthrown. We go to all in Colombia. We see a change in government is about to take place. It is looking good. Will that change be supported by the army or those who would overthrow the government? And around it goes. And here we see in America, the threat of a coup is still with us. And if we vote to avoid a coup, will we be able to keep it? Will those in the army and the military support a just government? This is the problem, my brothers and sisters. So let us hear more from our brother, Joe Myers, on this issue.
Before we go to Joe, we want to remind you that we continue this conversation. We have a special program for you tomorrow on WBAI 99.5 FM. We have brother, comrade, former political prisoner, Jalil Muntakim, and we have the chairperson for our National Jericho, Jihad Abdul-Mumit. And they're going to be talking about a People's Senate and making you aware of the Spirit of Mandela's initiatives that will follow the tribunal that correctly charged the United States with genocide. And you can just say Google WBAI.org, and there's a link. You can click right on it and listen, or you can dial 212-209-2877 and get in the link as well. And we want to thank our sister Ann from New York Jericho. She dedicated several books that we will be offering up as premiums to fundraise because freedom ain't free and we want to keep our program on the air. We will also be offering up the books on the Panther 21 and, of course, Mamiya's book, Black Lives Have Never Mattered. So if you know somebody you want to give a gift to, get on the blower and give us a shout-out and make a pledge for one of these three books or all three. And with that having been said, again, I want to thank Sister Ann for making that donation, and I'm most appreciative of Brother Jalil Muntakim and Brother Jihad Abdul-Mumit for agreeing to get on and talk about the follow-up. It's one thing to charge this government. The next thing, as Ralph's father used to say to him when he talked about a bully that was bothering him, his father used to say, "And then what did you do?" So Brother Jihad and Comrade Jalil are going to give us our marching orders in terms of what did we do.
Well, I have to correct Sister Betty there. There was never a bully that bothered me. There was a racist society of adults that needed fighting. And my story is the same as everyone else's story who lived in this society. We are oppressed daily, but the question is, and then, what did we do? And so the program we're talking about, WBAI, tune in on your radio, 99.5 at 8 p.m., and we will, it's Eastern Standard Time, we will be continuing this discussion. Next up is Professor Joe Myers. Joe, your microphone is open.
And I want to say to the family that's on the blog tonight, Sister Muba is extremely modest because she did not let you know she will be one of the presenters on this parent forum. Specifically, this is a group of people who are saying no. It's a special forum for public school parents, and it is being sponsored by the New York City Coalition to finally end mayoral control 2022. Brother Joe, your mic is open.
Joe, your mic is open.
Brother Joel, your mic is open.
I don't see it.
Okay. Well, we're going to go back to Sister Anna.
Okay. My phone that was getting blotted out there. I think now it's working again.
Okie dokie. Your mic is open. We wait for your words of wisdom.
Yes, I want to follow what Brother Ralph had just said about the coup d'etats that have taken place all around the world as opposed to democratic elections. And it turns out that if we look at the recent elections, almost every election is kind of a coup disguised as an election. And even in the most normal circumstances, there's a certain nominating process where one or another enemy of the bulk of the people and representative of the corporate high finance that has made itself rich by exploiting the majority of the people in this country and even more intensely the people around the world in the so-called colonial world where the stratifications are even sharper and where the hardships of the people every day are converted into massive wealth both for the elites in those countries and even more for the wealth that is taken out of those countries and brought here in order to be able to buy people off to support the horrible system of exploitation and oppression at home because it can be made to look as if the people here are benefiting from that exploitation around the world, that is impoverishing everyone else to bring wealth here and buy off and corrupt the very minds of the of the people, and every election is really a referendum on which style of rule do we want to accept from the imperialists, and which, Barack Obama put it, he was, if you remember the slogan, it was the change you can believe in. Change you can believe in, it was, if anything, it was short change and it was chump change as the system became more enmeshed in wars around the world and in wars against the people at home, but again with a slightly different style, which actually infuriated the other part of the ruling class that it was that it had even the veneer of taking oppressed people into account at all. But when we look at a lot of the elections recently, almost every one of them has been corrupt, has been rigged, even between the two major parties. One of the most dramatic changes that took place in the United States was the coup d'etat of 1963, with the outright murder of John F. Kennedy and carried out by the intelligence infrastructure at the command, again, of high corporate finance. And it's sort of in your face. The entire official story is totally absurd. And yet, almost every elected official, I don't think this, I think there was one in Texas of Mexican origin, I forget his name, was the only elected official that even questioned the official line of the assassination of JFK. And one of the some of the issues, at least on the surface, was that JFK had decided that the United States could not win the war in Vietnam, and so he wanted to schedule a pullout so that the imperialists wouldn't be dragged into a losing war more and more. And that pullout never took place. It was up to the Vietnamese people to strike a very heavy blow and force the U.S. out under an administration of Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, who were forced to pull out anyway, even after they both benefited from and were, if you look more deeply, were actually involved in different parts of organizing the assassination itself. And another turning point, I think, in the same area was the death of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, which is not usually touted as an assassination, but the circumstances were very specific and the differences in the ruling class were very sharp. And it was that assassination intensified a Cold War that might have been reduced to a certain extent. It certainly preceded the use of the atomic bomb in Japan and set into motion a change in mentality from the New Deal to McCarthyism and the not just the Cold War, but the Korean War that followed under the Truman administration. So we can look back also more recently at the 2000 election, which was in your face, stolen in Florida by the Bush and put George W. Bush in the White House. I wouldn't say in the presidency because he didn't really get elected by the Electoral College. The Florida election was totally, again, in your face, stolen. Even the corrupt media had a coalition that traced what happened in that election, and they came to the conclusion that George W. Bush in Florida had lost by 3,000 votes. And if you remember, on the very day that report was published, and this was a media coalition that included the Wall Street Journal, Daily News, New York Times, prominent newspapers that usually go under the conservative or liberal label. And on that day, there was a plane crash in Rockaway. And as a result, that was the headline on all the newspapers, and the story of and the analysis of what happened in Florida was never brought up again. It was carried on pages like page 23 of the different major media. Their own report was never actually circulated to be seen by the public. And of course, the more recent elections have been conducted more and more in a civil war atmosphere, even though both sides of that civil war are controlled, again, by the tiny minority that rules the country in the name of majority rule and democracy, which is we're talking not just about the 1% ruling the 99%, we're talking about the 1% of the 1% of the 1% that really calls all of the shots and has reduced the entire electoral struggle to nothing but puppetry, while the people that really believe in and fought for democracy are today still languishing after decades in prison, which is what This show is all about trying to bring the political prisoners home, and you never hear that mentioned by any of these politicians that rule in the name of democracy. It's an insult to the intelligence of every citizen in the country, but we're up against a very skilled brainwashing media that is able to it is very difficult to get around because it controls almost all the news and the interpretations of the news, and thereby actually has colonized our minds, and we have to wake up to that. We have to stand up to them on every issue, because they are lying to us through and through, to our detriment, and even more so to the detriment of people oppressed by imperialism around the world in other countries, and now seems to be embarking on provocation that could lead to a war with Russia and China. Now they're picking up somebody their own size, and
I think that you have given us a real summary of what's happening, and that will carry us to next week. And thank you so much for listening in. And tomorrow, tune in again at 8 o'clock, 99.5 on your FM dial. And hear more. This is WBAI. And hear more of what we are talking about tonight. Thank you, and good night.